You're listening to Donuts and Top Cow.
Two great tastes that taste better together.
Thank you for listening. I'm one of your hosts, John Grigas.
And I'm Josh Crawley.
We are rolling episode 3. Welcome to episode 3. And we are moving on with artifacts in this episode. Hitting both artifacts 2 and 3. So we're quickly catching up to where we're at. I know that 5 is getting set to be released at the end of January. We're recording this in mid-January right now. First, we'd like to thank Westfield Comics in Madison, Wisconsin, and also online at westfieldcomics.com. The online subscription service is available to anybody and has some terrific discounts and ship-to-your-door service. There are two retail locations for Westfield in Madison, one on the west side and one on the near east side, close to downtown. And we encourage you, if you get to Madison, come on by. And if you get to Madison, definitely come on by to the east side store on Tuesdays, even though it's not new comic release day. This is the day that we record, so you got a good chance of getting an extra donut or two if you come in early to the store from our podcast, which brings us to donuts. We have donuts from Scott's Pastry Shop in Middleton today, and quite an assortment today. We've got all sorts of things. Frosted, we got Long John's, looks like we got a cinnamon fritter type of thing, and some more maple, Josh.
Maple are tasty.
So we're grateful to have those. I actually got, if you are into technology, we got into something called Groupon, which sends coupons via email, and I had a coupon for a dozen donuts for half price. So we jumped on that and decided to feature that today. So if you want to check them out, they can also be found at scottspastryshoppy.com. And beyond that, we got more good stuff. Our contest is still going, isn't it?
It is. Let's see here. You have until midnight, Central Standard Time, January 31st, 2011. All you need to do is drop us an email at dtcpodcast@gmail.com. And what you have to do is all of the correct entries with the answer, which issue of Witchblade did my friend Chad Fiddler do a little coloring in? That will enter you in for the chance to randomly drawn win a copy of Artifacts number 1 foil cover signed by author Ron Mars.
Pretty exciting opportunity to get some cool signed collectible. The first issue of this, and I'll have to say, moving through Artifacts, this is a series that is definitely worth picking up. Definitely has big event written all over it. And what I like is every issue seems to have a killer moment that just makes you go, you know, it's kind of one of those turn the page and holy moly, look at what happened here.
And sometimes quite literally a killer moment.
Yeah, which is kind of the recap. If you listened to us last episode, we recapped Artifacts 1. And near the end of that episode, Aphrodite 4 shot Sarah's sister Julie point blank in the head and kidnapped her daughter Hope, which triggered a lot of stuff and brings us to Artifacts 2, which Artifacts 2 opens up with a blood-splattered balloon floating in New York City, and it happens to be Julie's blood splattered on this, and it falls in front of a character we've met earlier, Tom Judge, who picks it up and kind of disappointingly says, "Already?" That takes us quickly over to Jackie Estacado, who is interrogating some mob competition, it looks like, somebody with the Russian mafia. There he gets the news about Hope being kidnapped. He gets a telephone call from somebody that we're not sure about yet, but he dispatches this competition and moves over to find Sarah. Cut into the Angelus, who themselves get the news. She, of course, because of her connection personally with Sarah, is concerned and goes to find her. Which brings us over to Sarah Fazzini identifying the body in Central Park.
And then Sarah's man friend, boyfriend, Patrick Gleason, take a little walk and discuss who the infamous killer now is. And then we kind of have a gathering of everyone. We got a nice double-page spread here with Darkness on one side, Angelus on the other. Whole bunch of panels in between.
Yeah, nice traditional 9-panel exchange there, right, centered in the 2 pages, where we get Jackie, the Darkness, basically telling Sarah that she's not alone in this quest to find hope. And though Sarah resists, Jackie insists. And right around that time, the Angelus comes, and as is with their character, the Darkness isn't all that happy to see the Angelus showing up.
They have issues. You know, they're trying to work together for hope.
That's true. However, they do start to rev up a little bit. And what I think is the killer moment of issue 2, just with a hand on each chest, Sarah Pizzini as the Witchblade completely disarms the Darkness and the Angelus and turns them back to their depowered human forms.
That was kind of a shocker. Because as far as I know, of course, I don't know if she's ever been touching both at the same time before.
That's
especially in an agitated state. It's not like these people have never been around each other before in various ways, permutations.
Yeah, the way it's written, it almost seems like a new development or a new quality of these artifacts interacting with each other.
Yeah, maybe for now we'll chalk it up to heightened emotional states and personal feelings?
Well, whatever it might be, it's got them all surprised, and that is something that I really see playing out sometime in the future.
Yeah.
And will possibly be necessary. Tom Judge shows up to debrief everybody on what's going on, at least as much as he knows. And this got me to an interesting question. One of the things when he first is introduced, because the Witchblade, Sarah, doesn't know who Tom Judge is, but Jackie fills him in.
Yes.
He uses the phrase, his name's Tom Judge, he got me out of hell, literally. So it brought the question up to me is, how does Tom Judge factor into Jackie's origin as the Darkness?
Not his origin, per se, but it was the beginning of the second volume of The Darkness. Paul Jenkins and Dale Keown. Oh, because at that point, Jackie was dead. At the end of Volume 1, Jackie pretty much dispatched of a whole bunch of people by blowing up whatever warehouse full of gasoline type, some accelerant. So Jackie was actually dead. Jackie had to come back somehow. Tom Judge was already in hell. One of his goofy random rapture powers, other than turning into the giant Scully looking purple orange creature, actually involved, was it instilling hope? Revealing hope? I'm pretty sure it had a lot to do with hope, though. So, not that hope. Maybe not.
Now there's a go. Talk about full circle again.
So, that's their relationship, not the actual origin itself, as far as I know.
So, Tom basically says, I can let you know what's going on, but I've got these demons trying to drag me back to hell, and I'm wondering, Jackie, can you give me a hand here? We get a single-page clip to some exchange of hope being delivered by Aphrodite 4 to whomever is setting off this entire miniseries that we recall from Artifact Zero.
The guy with the blue gloves.
And ends the issue with a great cliffhanger. Such a lovely child, so innocent, truly a pity she has to die.
Bum, bum, bum.
In the back, the special features, as we mentioned last time, there's Origin of Darkness, 2-page spread.
Drawn by Dale Keown.
And, yeah, I like the connection there. He's got a history with the character, which seems to be a thread of these spreads. Written by Ron Mars, and talks about the Darkness having been handed down from a human host, passed down like a virus from father to son, and ending with where we are at now with Jackie. Kind of describes in the end that Jackie is a man of honor, so he maybe wields the Darkness different from the line of fathers that came before him. But even so, there's good reason to be afraid of the dark.
still a scumbag, but, you know, kind of an honorable scumbag.
Yeah. He also kicks off the House of Cards by Brian Rountree in the back, Jackie, and there is also a write-up of the Darklings. And appropriately so, on the opposite page, Danielle Baptiste, a short background of the Bearer of the Angelus, and the Angelus Warriors. So, some helpful material in the back of number two.
And actually, before we go any further, I realized after we recorded the last episode, it seemed like we were talking a lot of story, but maybe not quite as much art. Michael Broussard's art. You could see a lot of it. I shouldn't say a lot of it. Previously, he'd done a bunch of Darkness with Phil Hester. And he was good. Really good. You know, when I first read and opened, especially Artifacts number one, I was pretty floored at how much he stepped up his game. Not to be left out, the inkers, Rick Basaldua, Joe Weems, and Sal Regla, and colorist Sonny Go, all obviously add to the awesome, awesome artwork.
Yeah, and I'm impressed by the consistency of inking, so it makes me wonder, you may have a better idea of this, having done some books yourself, but when you have an event like this and you have multiple inkers, is it a case of, okay, you get, here's your four pages, here's your four pages, here's your four pages?
My guess would be they're probably doing it sort of like that, breaking it up by scenes so that the scenes are kept as consistent as possible with themselves.
Or would you think it'd be like with DC Series 52, where certain art teams dealt with certain characters? Or maybe not. Well, I guess
that's probably not that. Example, my guess would be, if anything, it might be maybe one person's tackling figures, another person's tackling backgrounds, maybe something like that.
Beautiful stuff, though.
Yeah.
Just getting stronger and stronger. And you can go back through and read these books without reading the words and still get a lot of story, which is,
yeah,
that's kind of my, you know, thumb test of what really good comic art is. Moving on to Artifacts 3 now. We're starting to crank up, and folks are starting to team up and get together. We open up
but
with...
But not get together.
That's for another time and place. But Artifacts 3 opens up in jail, and we have a group of guards that are watching through video surveillance one of their prisoners, Ian Nottingham.
Ooh, Ian Nottingham.
Who we've seen before.
Yes, we have. Ian first appeared, it's been a while, I'm pretty sure it was Witchblade number one, though.
Right, because he was with Irons, right?
Yep. Isn't he was kind of the right-hand man of Kenneth Irons, a long-time dude trying to get the Witchblade.
Yeah, which, for like centuries trying to get the Witchblade.
Yeah. Lost a little bit of his hand in that process.
So now Ian Nottingham was his right-hand man, but he didn't have... He hadn't been around for 100 years or more.
No. Ian's not been around quite so long. He is British. But most recently, we saw Ian, I want to say, in Witchblade Volume 3, roundabouts issue 100. Sarah arrested Ian and sent him to jail. And some people, myself included, were probably like, I can't last, you know, forever. I mean, it's Ian. He's trained pretty well. Well, lo and behold, we found out why.
The power goes out, cell blocks open, the guards get into motion, and all the cells are accounted for, the prisoners are accounted for with the exception of one, and that's Nottingham's, which is empty. He dispatches guards through some pretty sweet and stealthy fighting scenes, comes up through a manhole cover, and gets picked up.
By Aphrodite 4.
So we know what side he'll be on.
Yep.
And one question, just going back, I don't know if what kind of Easter egg this might be or what kind of clue that Ron might have put in, or maybe it was something the letterer put in, is as the guards get mobilized, they run out of the room. There's a couple guards playing cards. There's one guard monitoring the video, and there's one reading a book. And as he drops the book, it turns out to be Robin Hood. Do you make any significance of that?
Well, looking a bit closer, it doesn't appear to actually be hand-drawn and inked. It looks like that was lettering put there by Troy. So I would assume in this instance, especially since, you know, it's legible and all that, that it's there for a reason. What that reason is, I have no clue.
Aphrodite asks the question that I think Josh was alluding to before, is you could have walked out of this prison anytime you wanted. Why wait till now? He said, well, never had a good enough reason to leave before now. The scene cuts back to Tom Judge fighting with these demons that are after him. One grabs Gleason and he helps out Gleason. And everybody else is activated and ready for battle. Everybody else being the Angelus, the Witchblade, and the Darkness.
So obviously, it's not like Sarah took their power permanently last issue.
Yeah, she just disarmed them momentarily,
yeah.
I guess.
We got a few panels of fighting here with some voiceover by Mr. Tom Judge.
They do dispatch the demons. They end up back in the church. And Tom, as he had said when we first saw him approach the group in Artifacts 2, said that he knows what's going on. He gives them the briefing from the pulpit of this church, which is a nice stylistic touch.
Can't go wrong with a decrepit, run-down old church with giant stained glass windows behind the altar.
Yeah, really nice scene. The coloring really stands out in that in any of the Tom Judge perspective shots, as opposed to the brighter coloring of the fight scenes. And if you didn't get a chance to pick up Artifact Zero, or you don't plan to, Tom pretty much helps you out by running through 12 of the 13 artifacts, identifying each of them with a single panel that either shows the bearer or the artifact or some other related moment. Notable is that the eighth panel is a woman named Alina Enstrom recently claimed the Pandora's box.
Bum, bum, bum.
Major spoiler there. I guess I should have warned about that, but maybe you're getting used to us by now.
Yeah, they better be. Or they'll just stop listening.
Could be, but I know that I did hear tweeted out that Pandora's box number 5 was back from the printer, so they're ready to ship on that one soon.
Also notable on this page, Michael Finnegan has the Glacier Stone and the Blood Sword. But the layout on this page, in the text, the Blood Sword is in Finnegan's possession, at least for now. There's a panel of a somewhat androgynous figure kind of in shadows, yet stark lighting, reaching towards the Blood Sword.
Reaching for it, so we can be pretty sure he'll be liberated from that, I'm thinking.
Oh, there's also another much more explicit reveal this time than we had in Artifacts Issue 1, Panel 11 there. So, spoiler alert here, it's the Aphrodite IV chassis with the Coin of Solomon in the chest.
If you're not reading closely, you'll just see, while the bearer of the Coin of Solomon remains unknown. Well, unknown to Tom Judge, I guess. But
yeah. Or Josh, myself, who was being a little, brainless when he read Issue 1 and didn't notice, why is the Coin of Solomon pretty much right next to Aphrodite? Oops. So, bunches of artifacts. We got some more talking. And who should show up but Tilly? Tilly was a kind of major supporting character in the Tom Judge miniseries The Rapture. She's kind of a precog by way of mathematics.
Oh, right.
Might be a little redundant now that we have the curator and Tilly.
Yeah. Wow, interesting.
Not that the curator's hanging out with these guys running back and forth, whereas Tilly would be much more likely to do something like that.
To switch sides?
Just to go around gallivanting and...
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, the curator kind of draws people to him as opposed to that. So she interrupts the conversation in the church and joins the team. So our team, I guess, is starting to build up to find hope. And that includes Sarah's the Witchblade. It includes the Angelus. It includes the Darkness, the Rapture, and now Tilly. And then it cuts into several pages of Aphrodite out doing some recruiting of her own.
Yes. What is this, about 4 or 5 pages we have here? It's, while we've seen in the first couple issues now the recruiting of the protagonists of the story, for better or worse, Aphrodite 4 is recruiting the antagonists here. Well, first I'll describe the pages. There's it's kind of a split vertically. One half of the page is Aphrodite 4 speaking. The other half is broken into 3 panels, kind of who she's recruiting. And what they did with this issue is each one of the person she's recruiting gets a page. those three panels are all drawn by a different artist. That usually has something to do kind of with the character they are recruiting. So the Pandora's Box page, for example, is drawn... I don't remember who drew it. John's looking right now, but...
Facundo Perico?
Yes.
Or Percio? Facundo Percio?
I didn't double-check pronunciation on that one. He did the... He's doing the Pandora's Box miniseries. And then Stjepan Sejic illustrated the page where Sabine, bearer of the Wheel of Shadows, is being recruited. Interestingly, though, Sejic actually did this page kind of pen and ink instead of his usual digital computer coloring stuff. Yeah. Actual black and white based line art here from Sejic. A couple more characters getting recruited. And I have to admit, normally I'm not a fan of, oh, we need some extra artists here doing some this and some that. However, if for some reason, you know, it was, oh, we're getting a little behind, we need a little help with the artwork, I think this is the best way you can actually go about doing that. And in this instance, it was actually done very well.
Yeah, this is a really cool touch.
And, okay, oh, like I said, so we had a couple of the characters, and actually here, the demon Molly, we find out, apparently only has half of the power that was once his. So possibly the Heartstone. Somehow, when Abby actually got her powers, the power was divided between them, is where I think we can all make a fair assumption at this point, at least.
And Aphrodite IV is offering the chance to reclaim all of it from his tormentor. And then we move on to Gloriana.
Oh, Gloriana, the counterpart to Finnegan's Glacier Stone.
Yep, she's got the Ember Stone.
And then, ooh, we get to the good part.
And then she goes to recruit Michael Finnegan, who happens to hold two of the artifacts, which could help with some of the balance she's looking to upset.
Yeah, except Finnegan, he's like, nah, I'm pretty good at choosing sides. I'm not choosing your side.
Yeah, and if you know anything about Michael Finnegan, and I've seen him before, he's not the most cooperative of people, no matter who's asking for his help. And he goes to back off, but it looks like Aphrodite IV brought in a little muscle of her own that she sprung from prison at the beginning of this episode.
Ooh, it's Ian Nottingham. Ian takes a stab at Finnegan as he tosses him over a bridge into the water with the intent of killing him, you know, letting him die. I'm the guy whose sword you had.
That's right. So that's, I think, the killer moment of this issue, is when Nottingham takes back the blood sword from Michael Finnegan.
Though the blood sword, not the only sword Nottingham has had. Actually, I forgot to mention this earlier. At one point, Nottingham actually had a fragment of the Witchblade, which was known as Excalibur.
Oh, that might come into play at some point.
It's a little pre-Ron Mars Witchblade trivia there for you. Bum, bum, bum.
And then we have our cliffhanger moment for the issue, which takes us to a mountaintop monastery.
I'm going
to
go with Tibet.
In Tibet. And we...
I mean, it's not actually Tibet. I'm just saying it's Tibet because...
It seems Tibetan.
Yeah.
Mountaintop monasteries are most magical there, perhaps. And it looks like we're introduced to the 13th artifact.
Or at least who's bearing the 13th artifact, with kind of purple glow coming from his mouth and smoke. Looks like he's got some ground effects glowy tattoos, too.
He laid rampage to this monastery. He was a member of the monastery, it seems, and killed his brothers with the line, "My brothers have paid the price just as you have. The burden that was once yours is mine now." So he overtook his master and took possession of the 13th artifact, and that's our cliffhanger for 4.
And all mankind will suffer for it.
So another solid issue. They keep building, and I'm liking the story arc. It's going to make a good trade.
Ramping stuff up.
One of the things I thought, as far as the layout, is how smooth it's going to read in trade, ending the first issue with the balloon from the park, and then opening the second issue with Tom Judge finding that balloon. It's kind of a neat trick. In the back of the book, we have The Origin of the Angelus, written by Ron Mars, with art by Bart Sears.
Good old Bart Sears. Bart and Ron have worked together before on The Path from CrossGen Comics. the coloring here from IFS doesn't look like something I've seen on Bart's work very often, but the line work itself actually looks different than what a lot of people might remember of Bart's work. So,
yeah, it's really a beautiful panel. And one thing that's interesting in the coloring, if you look at the coloring of the Darkness splash page versus the coloring of the Angelus splash page, obviously you have a lot brighter, more golden tones in the Angelus, darker tones with the Darkness by definition. But one of the things that I like, and I don't know if it's always been that case from the origin of these characters or if Ron has just really enhanced this aspect, as you read them, you realize that the Angelus isn't all that good, and the Darkness definitely isn't all that bad, to the point where you really question what the good and evil truly is in the world. The Angelus was a lot darker, I guess. That's kind of an oxymoron statement, but before Daniel Baptiste had possession of the Angelus, but it's really an interesting thing. You're rooting for the Darkness a lot more than you're rooting for the Angelus most of the time.
Though I think in all fairness, too, I mean, it's kind of taking people's preconceived notions of what something might be and going, you know, it's not always black and white. There are shades of gray. And sometimes can you really apply that stuff to something as old as these two forces that are really more of, I mean, they're primal, basically elemental forces. They almost kind of transcend, you know, those basic, oh, she's good, he's bad.
So cool juxtaposition of relationship adds a lot that they're on the same team. That's also pretty notable.
They're staying balanced.
The House of Cards, just to run down the House of Cards in this issue, there's a profile of Ian Nottingham, a profile of Gloriana Silver, Sabine, Alina Enstrom, and Molly. So basically we're getting the other side profiles as they are lining up against the protagonists.
Also, one of the, well, the, let's go with the post House of Cards essay, is the guest artists to this issue spotlighted. Facundo Percio, Stepan Sejic, Paolo Pantalena, Sheldon Mitchell, and Nelson Blake II.
And we also have a little news, which if you're following Top Cow and following Artifacts, you already realize this, but there is a new artist coming on. Michael Brossard did a fabulous job with the first story arc, but there's a new one coming on for the second story arc, who we all might be pretty familiar with.
Wiles Portasio.
That should excite the crowd.
X-Factor, Uncanny X-Men, Wetworks, Stormwatch, most recently Uncanny X-Men with Matt Fraction.
So we'll look out for that, but right now we're still loving the first story arc by Ron Mars with the art pencil work by Michael Brossard. Thanks for listening. We're going to stop here and see you next week.
I do have one more thing that I think we've forgotten every episode. That it should be blatantly obvious, but I don't think we've ever given Top Cow's website URL.
Oh, we should start off with that.
TopCow.com. TopCow.com. Go give it a visit. They have, like, message boards and stuff.
They've got cool message boards. They've got previews of upcoming books. They've got looks into books already in print and some pretty fun news. And it's a good website. So that's
creator profiles. Oh, actually, there was one other piece of news that I wanted. Well, I don't know that it's news, but one item I wanted to share. As you know, John and I are on Twitter. JG Madison W is John's username. Mine's just Josh Crawley. Phil Smith, the awesome production guy at Top Cow, had mentioned he was finishing up some of the work on the Artifacts playing cards. Apparently, two of the Artifacts may be changing hands, and that stuff will actually be revealed in the trading cards.
So it pays to get to your LCS. It pays to buy these books on time to get those trading cards.
Though I realize I've been calling them trading cards. They're playing cards, actually, like a standard 52-card set. Next time we can talk about who we think might be changing, what Artifacts might be changing hands.
Cool that it's coming out, and we'll take it when it comes. And from my understanding, they're going to release it a few cards at a time as the Artifacts issues release, and that'll be a lot of fun to keep some of that momentum going, keep some of that spark and energy.
Four cards per issue, I'm guessing probably I was going to say one from each suit, but there's 13 artifacts, and I don't